Welcome to Writers Talking TV, brought to you by the Writers Guild of Canada. I'm Jeff Biederman, a screenwriter who's worked on Canadian TV comedies including Spun Out, Life with Derek, Second Gen, and if all goes to my cunning plan, we'll parlay this podcast into a job on CBC's hit series Kim's Convenience. You weren't recording that last part, right? No, well, you were. We'll fix it in post. Today I'll be speaking with Inns Choi and Kevin White, co-creators, executive producers, and writers on Kim's Convenience, the funny, heartfelt story of the Kims, a Korean-Canadian family running a convenience store in downtown Toronto. Following the smash success of Season 1, the show has kept momentum with a cross-Canada tour to promote Season 2, which has begun airing on CBC. Here's my job interview, casual conversation, with Inns Choi and Kevin White about Kim's Convenience, recorded in front of an audience at TIFF Bell Lightbox in Toronto. Hello. Can everyone hear me? Okay, good. I'm going to tell you all a story. No. First off, thank you all for emerging from your turkey-induced comas to be here tonight. I'm Jeff. This is Kevin.
Kevin, hi.
Say hi. This is Ince. Ince Choi and Kevin White.
Hello.
How are you?
Thanks.
They are co-creators, co-showrunners, executive producers, writers. It's a lot of credits. Feels needy. I don't know. But you guys deserve it. And we don't know each other that well, so this will be a nice way for us to get to know each other in this kind of interview setting. Kind of thought it was a job interview, to be honest with you.
We'll take the job. We'll take the job, Jeff.
These are mostly episode pitches. Terrence A. Stories, because I really relate to him. We're going to keep this pretty informal. I'm going to ask a bunch of questions, then we'll screen an episode, and then you'll ask a bunch of questions. Then Instant Kevin will ask a bunch of questions, and then there'll be a lot of questions what's happening. First off, it's always good to start an interview, job, or this setting with some shameless flattery. I love your show.
All right, thank you.
Yes. Good. That's it. I actually don't have any questions. I'm going to let you guys talk for 2 hours. And the reason why I love your show is because it's a family comedy. I love family comedy. All in the Family, Family Ties, Modern Family, Mama's Family. Anyone? Does anyone know what Mama's Family is? You know what Mama is. But I really think the show deserves to be spoken with that same reference, all jokes aside. And I guess my first question would be, how did you two come to work together to create the show that I swear I'm not totally jealous of? I'm very jealous of this show. Now, you guys talk for about an hour. I'm going to sit here.
Well, hello all. I wrote a play called Kim's Convenience in 2011 that premiered at Thinks at the Toronto Fringe Festival. And then it got picked up by Soul Pepper in 2012. And then it toured across Canada, during which time a lot of production companies were interested in it as to develop it into a film or a TV show. And eventually we hooked up with Thunderbird Films. And then they put me on, I never wrote a TV script before. So they wanted to help me. So they wanted me to choose a co-creator. So then they set me up on these blind dates with eligible co-creators. And I don't even know what I'm looking for. I've never done this. So Kevin and I met Balzac's, I think. We met there. And just got to know him. And then I met with some other people.
And they turned him down.
And then I chose Kevin.
What was it? Was there something you bonded over other than, obviously, I read that you saw the play, so obviously you talked about that, but was there something in particular? Beard length? What was it about this handsome, tall, I don't really know, I shouldn't be saying any of these things, but what was it about Kevin?
I think Kevin, he was just a regular guy. No pretensions and just smart, a lot of experience, but just a regular guy that, yeah, that, I think that was it. He was smart and regular guy, grounded. Because I can kind of go off. I feel like I could come up with crazy ideas. I mean, he can too, but he's kind of like a rock.
I'm the no fun guy.
So I thought, it was, yeah. Good.
So, okay, and we've, I mean, I've had the experience being brought into a show where there's a writer who hasn't necessarily run a show. I mean, obviously this one probably felt different going into the meeting. Was this like a show where you were, you know, this is going to be a great interview because I connect to the material, or were your expectations?
Well, I didn't know what to expect. I had seen the play a couple years before the meeting and really loved it. Cried a couple times. I was really moved by the story and the characters. So when I got the call from my agent saying, would you like to meet Ince? I was definitely on board. Wasn't sure what to expect. At Balzac's and or Balzac's, however you're supposed to say it, so it doesn't sound dirty. In the distillery, has two floors. And I remember, so he was meeting people. I was down on the main floor looking for him. I was there for about 10 minutes when I finally decided to go upstairs and see. And there in the back was Ince. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I really have to find this guy. And but we had a great chat and really mostly talked about the material and the play. And then that was it. We chatted, I think, for an hour and a half. Yeah. And then Ince went off and met a bunch of other people. and it was a few weeks.
Name names, Ince.
A few weeks before I heard back. And then there was a second interview, and so I was encouraged. Can I tell the story?
Yeah, sure.
So we have a second interview, and I'm excited. And
it's a callback.
Yeah. And Ince starts the interview.
I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. He starts by saying, so I wanted to meet again because I couldn't really remember what we talked about the first time. So I thought that was also encouraging. No, I knew what he meant. I think it had been a whirlwind. This is my interpretation, my ego-saving interpretation, that it had been a whirlwind of meeting people. And anyway, I was very pleased to get a second interview.
And then so you meet, you decide you like each other, you're going to work together. Are you sitting down and saying, okay, here's what we want to, this is how we're going to turn this into a TV show? Was there already a script for a potential pilot? What was that kind of sort of nuts and bolts process? And if
we
there
just
wasn't one,
like,
make it up.
Started, we just hung out in a room.
There was a room at Soul Pepper. They have classrooms. And so we had the run of a room for, I don't know, three months?
Weeks? Oh, 3 months?
No, I don't know. Was it? What did you say?
3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
Longer, it felt longer.
Yeah, it felt like 3 months. No, it was on and off. It was sort of part-time schedule over the summer.
Yeah.
And we were trying to,
we had some boards, some paper, and then just kind of talking about.
We also had a chin-up bar.
Chin-up bar.
Especially ordered by Ince, because he was trying to stretch out his back. So I know we look pretty ripped. We'd be lucky if we could do one. Maybe two, but that was something that kept us entertained. We also had a soccer ball. The classroom was empty, so these were ways of avoiding writing.
Yeah. These are the George Brown classrooms.
Yeah.
There at the Young Center. So we'd kick the ball around, stare out the window, and then write stuff once in a while.
But no, it was a good way. I mean, we really did stay pretty focused. And, you know, we were always talking about, even in those initial meetings, those two interviews, we were talking about the play, the characters, how it might expand in a television context. And we asked a lot of questions about, should there be additional characters? How much do we develop? Mm-hmm. You know, where are we finding the family? Are they before the play, after the play?
Oh, yeah.
What's the status of Chung and Appa's relationship? How old is everybody? Do they have to be the same age they are in the play? And do they have friends? Do we develop this car rental agency? Do we develop OCAD? All these questions. So that took a lot of time, and we took, you know, some paths this way and that. And
I think what was important from the get-go was trying to maintain what worked in the play. So maintain that family, heart, love, but then just the comedy. So it was comedy, 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 and then the love of the family and the heart. So trying to keep that, maintain that throughout the TV series.
Well, it's interesting because you do have it's like a workplace family comedy. It's sort of a unique balance. I know I'm sort of skipping ahead a bit, but when you tell those stories, which is great, it gives you a wealth of material, I assume, to draw from. But so even at the early stages, were you saying, okay, yeah, okay, I'm okay with having a car rental, but I don't want, just those kinds of stories? Or were you open to like, yeah, that actually could be a rich kind of world. Let's not shut that door. Like, was it, again, a lot of times you'll pitch a show and it's like, this is the show we've pitched. And then you sit there and you're like, is that a series? Is this a world I want to live in for the next, hopefully, bunch of years? Mm-hmm. Or were you sort of, let's just see where the conversations take us, and let's not have rules?
Yeah, I don't know. It was definitely the home, the store. So we kind of located. So we're going to have stories around the store, obviously. And then upstairs, what that looked like. And then handy. And then we just, I feel like it might have been a strategic move on Kevin, but I just felt like it was this organic, meandering process of just, who's this? And then we talk about this new character. I don't know. Okay. And then what does this look like? Or what's the church life like? What's the Korean community? You know, is there a rival? Who is this? Who's Mrs. Park? I don't know. That's where Kimchi came out of. We're just talking about mm-hmm. friends. And we struggled with Chung for a while.
Yeah, for a long while.
Because Chung was always, like in the play, for those of you who haven't seen it, Chung has a very small part in it, but it's quite dramatic. And so bringing that to the comedy show, it's kind of a buzzkill. So we're always trying to make Chung's stories more fun and lighter. And it was always like, oh, it gets heavy. So that's where kind of Kimchi came along. And he was the leaven that kind of made Chung's stories lighter and funny.
So to back it up a bit, so then you was it just the two of you who said, okay, we're going to, you wrote a pilot and then presented it to Thunderbird, or you had a deal with CBC and they were expecting three scripts and a Bible? What was that?
As I remember it, there were two scripts that Thunderbird and CBC wanted.
No pilot.
That's right.
It was just middle season episode.
I think we may have had an idea, I remember, and we were trying to come up with a pilot idea that involved an offer of purchase for the store, much like the play. And I remember we had trouble with it because, you know, you can't sell a store in the pilot. You don't have a series. And we kind of knew that, but we were trying to figure out ways of at least having the thought, you know, the legacy, and trying to get at some of those aspects of the play in the pilot. But it just didn't work. And we had a number of other ideas. We had sort of Janet's photos, where Janet takes a bunch of pictures for school and Appa sells them. They're good, and they sell in the store, and he sells them without her knowing. That was one of the early story ideas. And then I remember just before we went on a break, we were talking about, I don't know, Pride. I guess it was July. And we talked about, you know, what Appa might be doing in Pride or what his attitude might be. And then I remember us saying something. Is that me? I'm really sorry if it is. It is. It's probably my kid who's locked out, and I don't care. No, I'm not going to. And I'll turn it off briefly. But I remember, you know, what would he do during Pride? And we thought, oh, a gay discount. And he sort of gets cornered into possibly being homophobic, or, you know, people think you're not cool with this poster. And that was an idea that I remember we had all these other ideas that were more developed than the gay discount idea. And I remember going into a meeting with CBC and Yvonne Thunderbird, and we sat in the lobby at CBC, and he said, okay, what do you got? And we said, oh, Janet's photos, and sort of pitched that. And I think we had some other stories. And then we said, oh, there's one other one that we don't really know where it goes, but it's gay discount. And he starts laughing, and he thinks of APA and this gay discount. And he goes, I like that one. Tell me about that one. We go upstairs.
Wow. It's really developed. You'll love it.
Anyway, we went upstairs to pitch CBC, and the same thing happened. So we have this big meeting. We pitch out all the stories that we've worked, and at the very end, we go, oh, and there's, I don't know if Yvonne said, like, tell me about gay discount. And they're like, gay discount? What's that? Well, that sounds funny. Anyway, so that quickly became, you know, a story that seemed to have appeal and to all of us, and so we developed that. But we never developed it as the pilot. We just thought it'd be a funny episode. But over time, the other stories kind of fell away, and we thought there's a way of using this to introduce a lot in the first episode. So it eventually became the pilot, but it was a long evolution from sort of idea on the side to, you know, the first episode.
And so that sort of became, because, yes, I mean, that's, I mean, I watch and I was like, oh, that's a brilliant pilot. Sets the tone. Every character has their take on that issue, tells you everything you need to know about every character. Damn.
I know, and I think actually whatever stories went with it, now I'm trying to remember. Anyway, they were pulled from another episode, so it was quite a mishmash by the time, but we managed to wrestle it into something that...
As a cool Christian Korean boy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Got meshed in there.
But there was a whole story about how Kimchi and Chung, there's a mix-up between the Gaytown Boys. I don't know if that ended up being the name of the a cappella group. It is, right?
It was the K-Town Boys.
Yeah. So the K-Town Boys were taking issue because they felt that their logo had been stolen by the Gaytown Boys. Anyway.
Didn't make the cut.
No. but you know, it's through the, I mean, there was a lot of talk, those scenes, that story existed for a long, long time. And it, you know, even though it doesn't end up becoming part of the episode or part of the series, it slowly informs you about the characters and, oh, what do we like about Kimchi and how should he sound? And if that's not right, what is right? And so that was
the script that was sort of, okay, this is, for lack of a better word, the template. And so then you had two in development, and then you moved to, I assume, a bigger room.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go about choosing that room? What you let Kevin hire everyone into in second?
Well, I wanted to learn.
Right.
It was like, okay, I'm never getting this opportunity ever again, so I want to be part of everything and learn, at least in season one. See how that goes, and then maybe I'll pull back on the workload in season two. So I was just, you know, yep, let's meet these writers and directors and interview the whole process. And I'm just there, and there's, you know, people who are more seasoned than I am. But yeah, we did all the interviews, and we hired six, including us.
I think so. We were lucky we were able to hire one of the other candidates that you'd interviewed for showrunner or co-showrunner,
yeah.
Gary Campbell. And Gary's a great guy, if anyone's had the chance to hear him speak or work with him. So Gary came on board, and then we interviewed a bunch of other people and wound up with Anita Capilla and Sonia Bennett, Rebecca Kohler, and I think... That was it. Then we had Matt Doyle and Amelia doing some story department support. But we were in a room. So I think we'd spend a year developing the first two. Maybe not quite. And then We went into a room with those writers in September for 2 months, from the Labor Day to the end of October. And then we sort of went away.
And we broke 11. So we got an order for 13.
Right.
And then we broke 11 stories there. And then we started writing.
And what was it like? I mean, clearly you guys have a friendship now and a bond and all that kind of stuff. But I'm sort of curious, because I've worked with partners before, but usually they're either equals, or, you know, we'd worked together before. There was some precedent. Was it challenging? I mean, you're wanting to learn, and it's your baby.
Yeah.
And this guy comes in and has a different ways of disciplining the children. Kind of. Did you feel? Did you say? I guess I would assume early on you said, "I'm not. If this is going to work, I got to be able to say whatever, and you got to be able to say whatever." Is that? I guess that's a process, but.
Yeah, I think even before Kevin came on board, the whole like Thunderbird films and Soul Pepper, even before that, everyone was really generous and just was like, "Ince, are you good with this?" And I was like, "Sure." or no, it's got to be kind of like this, or no, that has to look like. They were very like posters, you know, media stuff and right. how it's promoted or how it's marketed, right across the country. And so every city would be like, what about this image? It's like, oh, that's kind of weird, or whatever. So right up, so everyone was really courteous and conscientious of the work, and Kevin as well. And so when we started, yeah, it was through those conversations, just him and I. And then actually when we started writing, he was like, let's just write two. So he took one episode, and then I took another one. And so we wrote, and then we switched. And he edited mine, and I edited his. And through that process, and we did that back and forth, but it's kind of this unspoken dialogue that builds trust. It's like, whoa, that was...
Or resentment.
That was a really good line. Why'd you take that out? Or so I think it was through that process that the trust and the tone, I think, of the show was kind of built.
I think it's really interesting because, that can be an excruciating process, but can also be, you remember the first time, okay, can I rewrite this person's, like, that's kind of bold, and vice versa. Yeah. Like, that's a tough thing to do. And yes, you do learn a lot. I think you learn a lot about what you do or don't like. I think it's a really sort of a crash course, and how you handle that process. Because I don't know if you know, some writers can be petty. I don't know if that's an experience you've ever had.
But I think when it works, it's like there's this third option that either one of us couldn't have thought of. Like, I suggest this, Kevin suggests this, and then from that there's this, oh, but this is even better. And that's that, you know, third voice or whatever you call it.
And then in terms of breaking your stories, I mean, I think one of the things that I find sort of the most fascinating is in watching all the episodes is it's like a simplicity to things where it's not cluttered, scenes don't linger, it's not too fast, it's not too slow, there's not a lot of superfluous dialogue. Like, there's jokes, but they're character-based. They're not jokes on jokes on jokes that often. Sometimes there's runners. But I think, I certainly know as a comedy writer, sometimes writers will try and mask problems in the scene by writing jokes. I might do that. Sometimes.
I've done it lots.
Yeah. And because it's easier. But is that something that's conscious in your collective style? Is that taste? Is that just happen? Is that editing? Picture editing? Or is that like, no, when a script comes in, you want to make sure you're looking at like this much dialogue on a page, not this.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of it happens in the outlining, beating of the story phase, and just trying to figure out, do we need this step? this seems like we're treading water, or the story's not, there's, we're waiting for something to happen. That's usually the big telltale sign. So we don't like to be, we like to be surprised by the next beat. And you're always trying to shake it down to its most, you know, economic and hopefully elegant version, whatever story you're trying to tell. And, you know, it takes a great deal of time. The simpler something is, the more work probably went into it. Occasionally you'll strike gold and it'll be, oh, this kind of fits together, but it's very rare.
But are you literally like taking scripts going, nope, don't need that couplet, that's going to get in the way, or is it more of a feel as you're shooting it?
I'd say more of the former, again, in the editing process before we even shoot it. And, you know, we spend a lot of time in sort of a beat stage before we commit to any kind of outline or scenes, because ideally you don't want to waste time writing a scene that's not going to be in the show, but that's, you can't avoid that. There's always going to be some of that, and sometimes you get some little nugget or something happens in this dud scene that gives you a better scene. So I think it's just always trying to ask the questions, okay, why are they doing this? Why aren't they going and doing that? Why aren't they telling, why isn't Janet telling Gerald? What are we holding on to? Those kinds of questions all the time, in an effort to streamline the story and take off those burrs and those extraneous patches and bridges that mostly you have to do because you don't know how else to get to the end of the story.
And then, so first season, you start shooting. What's it like? What's the dynamic between you two? Like, what's, how are you dividing up the jobs on set? Like, there's room and then there's set. I assume you want to soak, you want to be there for, sounds like you're the type of person who wants to be there for every second of everything.
Yeah. I was on set most. I come from acting, and Paul and Gene and I, we were in the stage version of Kim, so we already had a shorthand. We knew each other really well, and even throughout the casting process, as part of that, so kind of knew the actors. And but I was just followed beside Kevin, all the meetings. There's so many meetings. Like,
but I want to
say
every
single thing, prop, costume, and so it's like, whoa, this is a lot, of yes. Meeting with people. And talking and decision making, and then the implications of each choice. You make a choice, and then it's like this whole thing's gonna—they're gonna do it. Oh, they're actually gonna make this thing. Yeah. Oh no, did we make the right choice? So
well, and while Int says he followed, he did sort of technically, but I, you know, he was a very quick study, and he's a very creative and thoughtful person, and so I certainly felt supported, and that the decisions we were making were much better with Ince's participation, obviously. And I really do feel like all those steps were taken together, and we just to get back to the writers, you know, we read everybody together, we would talk about it, what we thought of the samples, and then we would interview together, and you know, sort of postmortem every interview and say, what do we think of this and this, and that guy touched my knee too often in interview.
That one guy never looked at me. One interview. Here's a tip. Look at the people you're talking to.
Well, we had some...
One guy.
It worked both ways. We had one guy who wouldn't make eye contact with me, and we had another guy who wouldn't make eye contact with Ince. So it's very strange. Anyway, so all those steps were very done in concert with each other.
Now I'm totally self-conscious. Have I looked at Ince and Kevin in a balanced? I haven't looked out. Oh my God, there's people here. My God, that's actually really interesting. So, question in terms of story breaking. I would assume you have arcs, but when a story idea comes up, is it okay? We need an episode centered around the church. We need an episode centered around the car dealership. Is there? Do you have rules in terms of, okay, we don't do A stories with just this, or we don't do B stories with just the pair? Like, none of those artificial rules that you break anyway?
I don't know if rules are artificial, but we don't have too many. I feel like there's things that we want to do. There's always got to be something happening in the store.
Yeah.
You know, for the first two seasons, I think every cold open has been with Appa in the store with a customer or something along those lines. We very much wanted to anchor the world in the store and Appa. So there's, you can't have, are they phoning you now?
It's his son.
it's your daughter.
But there's always these times, you know, we've often asked ourselves, well, we did a big swap out of a story within episodes this season because we realized, oh, we don't have a story in the store. Like, everyone's off and there's no story happening in the store. And that just seemed
wrong. Who's minding
wrong.
The store?
Yeah, we asked that a lot.
Oh, no.
And so we always try and keep it real that way. But as far as stories and it's a taste thing. I remember saying we'd like to have a little more church world in season two because we'd had it in season one, but the stories didn't seem to be happening. But near the end, there was a couple more elements that took us into the church and into Oma's world.
I think a lot of the stories are led by the quality of the pitches. Like if there's something funny, then we'll just follow it. And if it's at handy, then it's at handy. If it's in the apartment more, it's in the apartment. So yeah, there's no, I mean, once we have a lot, then sometimes we kind of move things around and try to get a balance if we have, you know, yeah, but
there's no. And Thunderbird and CBC have both been really good at looking, you know, in the early stages of a season overview, they'll say, doesn't seem to be a lot of Janet, or, you know, Appa seems to drop out in the middle of the season. And so we have to adjust to that and say, yep, they're right, and we need to find something. Or it's all Janet and Gerald, let's say, because of season two when they were becoming roommates, it seemed like we had a lot of stories. How do we, you know, put Janet with Chung? How do we put Janet with Oma? So trying to push ourselves, as Int says, to balance things out.
And do you do like the tip of table reads and room punches and that kind of stuff?
Yes. So we read a lot within the room. We have a projector and we sit and we put the pages up on a big screen. And there's something about reading it communally together which shows a lot of both strengths of a story but a lot of flaws. You can really smell it quickly. And it's tough.
Yeah.
Especially if you've written the draft and it's going up in front of the room for the first time. It's like, oh.
Okay,
I was just, you know, yeah, trying to get it down.
I know. Turn it off.
So we do a lot of, and we adopt the character voices as best we can. And then, of course, after we've drafted it many, many times, eventually it comes out as a draft that will be read by the cast at a read-through, and that's usually halfway through the prep period, so we usually have about 4 or 5 days to fix the script after we read it, sometimes less. And then, you know, as far as the punch-up goes, we try to look at what the biggest problem is, and it might be a whole story, it might be, and we'll try and dig in with that and fix the story first and then worry about making sure the dialogue is as funny as it can be. Usually when you fix the story, the dialogue gets funnier. But we try and really work on the guts of each story as long as we can until we really have to shoot it.
And are you guys block shooting? Like, what's how, like, do you shooting on certain sets for a bunch of days and then shifting? You're not obviously not shooting in order, that kind of stuff is... So what's your shooting?
We do shoot in order, but we usually do two episode blocks. I mean, this season we did a big mega block at the start, 4 episodes, which was good and bad. But but we just go from 1 to 13, like 1 and 2, 3, 4, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Usually.
There's a few things that might flip around because of shooting reasons or prep reasons.
Like, have you? Did you find? Obviously, you learn a ton making a season. Are there? They're like, okay, we have too many stories here, or not enough here, or this set is not great to shoot in. Let's avoid that. I feel like there's a yes to that one.
No, actually, I was going to say we were blessed with a brilliant production designer who gave us nothing but great sets. So the opposite problem was everyone, you know, you wanted to shoot on his sets. So that was good. And as it turns out, we mostly shoot on sets. We only have maybe 25% location work. I would say the biggest learning is actor chemistry and seeing the actors who've come to inhabit the roles, and they may have a slightly different approach to the character than you had in your mind. I think that was the exciting part and illuminating part of first season auditions.
Yeah.
And you can sort of tell, again, the flaws of the writing when you put it in the hands of actors, gifted actors anyway. And you see, oh, there's certain limitations there. We're holding that person back, or they can do more than what we put on the page. I felt that way for Shannon, mm-hmm. Nicole's character, Nicole Power, who plays Shannon, because she was certainly less developed when we were auditioning.
Yeah, she wasn't her and Kimchi, Gerald, Terrence. Those guys, they were all like a lot minor at the beginning of the season. And maybe you could tell if you watched the whole thing. Because once we started seeing them on camera, we'd see their potential. And they're like, oh, that chemistry's great. Oh, he's good. And so then we would try to beef up their roles in the ensuing episodes.
Well, it seems like you could, it's like, oh, you almost saw the start of the romantic arc, and you saw it sort of, it was a pretty sudden sort of switch. Oh, he's interested. And it was like, yeah, of course he is. Like, you didn't sort of question it. And then it did seem it allowed her to develop more as a character. I know I've done this on shows where you print out the script, and then you see how many lines each actor has, because you know you're going to be sitting in a table read, and you know that the first thing all the actors do is count their lines.
They do?
They do. No one ever told me that. And I'm like, oh, they're just really diligent. They want to know when they speak next. And it's like, no, they're
counting.
They're counting. Do you, I mean, you have a wonderful ensemble. Do you, we obviously don't think about the number of lines, but do you are like, you know what, we don't have enough story for this person, or are you pretty open about that? Sometimes I would often do this too. It's like, hey, listen, we don't have much for you this episode. We know that. Wait till you see in 3 weeks when the new showrunner's here. They're going to have all sorts of stories.
Just wait for season 3.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean,
it's all about you.
It's hard with an ensemble, but do you feel that it's a good burden to have? But
I mean, I think we try to balance it with our four, the family. But to address that point of maybe competition or whatever, Paul and Gene, Paul's our number one, and he's such a great, generous leader. And he is like the dad. And because he's so generous and gracious, I feel like everyone else down the call sheet, they kind of take his example. So there may be some, I don't know, there may be some feelings of, hey, I only have 34 and a half lines versus whatever. I don't even know. I don't know. I doubt it, but even if there is, it doesn't come up. Yeah, it doesn't really, at least I haven't seen it.
No, and I think, as Ince said, we try and balance it from a story, funny, you know, how much are they in the episode versus, you know, breaking it down to line counts. But I have been on shows where that was the case. And it's not a good place to be for anyone.
No. It's never the right number.
Well, that's just it, and it's the wrong way. You know, hopefully, I think you'll get the right number if you feel your way through it and say, oh, often after a read-through, we'll say, oh, Janet wasn't in that at all. We got to change that. we got to give her something, or any of the characters, or Oma's been neglected. And so we really try and work on those and make sure that everyone gets something. It's just something fun to play. I don't think actors really care too much about how much screen time they have if what they're doing is really good. And it's fun to play, and it's different for them to play, and gives them, pushes their range.
I think it helps when it's a hit show. I think that's also.
I don't know.
So you've done a season. Now we're about to watch an episode from season two. I know this isn't the easiest question, but what was the takeaways from one? I know you learn a lot from mistakes, but this is a pretty big success. What's something that, you know, going in that you would never have thought you would have learned that you sort of did learn?
From season one?
Yeah. Even just about making the show.
I would go home every day. So I'd wake up at 6, go to set, and then come home. In season one, it was so hard. I'd come home at, I don't know, 7, 8, 9. So I'd leave home and not see my kids, and then come home and they'd be sleeping. So I would come home, pour myself a tall glass of something strong, and then I'd lie down and look at the stars because I haven't seen nature like for a week. So that was, so second season, I was like, I need to see my kids and I need to see some nature.
That's huge.
I think that's a big thing. Like, because you hear of, at least I've heard of, because you get into it and then your life falls apart. Or can fall apart. And for me, it was a balance of, okay, yeah, the work's important, absolutely. But I need time for my family and for me, or else I'm no good to anybody. That was a big takeaway from season one.
No, it's really important. And creatively, is there something, I assume you know the balance thing. I think you've probably learned it's hard, but you probably had a little bit more of a perspective. Is there something creatively different?
I certainly feel like my approach to writing has changed a lot because of Ince and because of this show. I think Ince came from, a pretty collaborative theater experience, at least with this particular play. And I think it was developed over quite a long period of time. So I think being okay with not knowing where something is going, and just being honest and saying, well, we know this doesn't work. We don't have a solution for it yet, but we know that that's an area that we have to work on. And I think also being open to story, even if there's no jokes yet. I think it's hard coming from a comedy background or a comedy world where the joke is everything, and the joke often masks an anxiety around, emotions or sadness or uncertainty. And so being able to just kind of be with those things while you figure out story and know that we'll find a funny way in, but let's get to something that's interesting, that we care about. That's probably the most important thing and shift that's happened for me, is that we always try and ask, do we care about this? Do we care that this person really wants this, and why? And I know that's, a question that's often asked and often talked about in writing books, but it's one that goes unanswered or we skirt over it. Because it's really hard to find a story that you care about. And it takes a lot of pitches and a lot of thought about how to bring someone into a story. I was thinking about it. You're much more sympathetic to your very best friend having a fender bender than you are a complete stranger. Especially if a stranger is telling you about a stranger who had a fender bender. It's like, I don't give a shit. So you have to figure out a way of making strangers suddenly people who are very appealing to you. And I think that's a challenging thing to do.
Well, I think what's clear, even in this short time, like, this is translating onto the screen. I think that's you know, people, I think writers often think, I just want to get a show made. I'm not going to worry about the process. The process is going to suck. It's going to be terrible. And then you get there, you're like, why didn't I think about the process? I have to work with these people every day. I think that, I don't know, whatever chemistry you guys have is clearly, you know, I think as much as, yes, you obviously have a great cast, and yes, it's good to have a leader like you have, but I think obviously you guys are the parents, and, you know, it's evident that that's that kind of chemistry that you guys have is on screen, and so let's watch some of that.
Okay.
What episode are we watching? I don't even, what is this? It's airing tonight, right?
It is. So it's the third episode broadcast. It's actually the second episode that we kind of wrote. I can't remember why we switched it now. But yeah, it's called House Guest, I think. And yeah. While we can answer more questions about it after. Right. I hope you enjoy it.
Enjoy. That was great. That was really funny.
Oh, good.
So I've been to a few of these events, and there's a lot of talk about like getting a show made and all that kind of stuff, but I'm sort of interested in talking about like what it's like to have a show that's a hit. I think in Canada we don't talk about that. How does it feel?
Feels great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it always feels nice to know that people are watching it and interested in it and connecting with the material.
Does it change anything in the room? Does it change? I mean, better snacks, but does it change how you approach the material? Does, obviously, there's a, you know, CBC did an amazing job promoting the show.
Yeah.
They've been really great.
I mean, last 2 weeks, we did a promo tour. So we went to Vancouver, Calgary, with the six leads. Where else did we go? Toronto? No. Ottawa, Montreal, St. John's. Yeah. I think that was it. And like in Vancouver, that was our first stop. It was like thousands of people. Like 1,000 people came to this theater, more than 1,000 maybe. But it was like to have a show. I mean, you just watch it at home, and I think in the theater, like in the theater world, you hear the audience, so it's like there's that visceral. Oh, okay, there's real people who like it. But then in TV, you just watch it at home or wherever, and or it's on, and you don't sense the community at large. Mm-hmm. But seeing it even here tonight, it's kind of like, oh, okay, people are laughing. Okay, it's good. They enjoy it. But seeing it in Vancouver and on the tour, there are like a whole theater full of people who appreciate it. And yeah, it's a great feeling that people connect with it and love it.
And when did, I mean, obviously there was you had the feeling with the play, so you knew people liked the material. But when did you feel that this was like a hit TV show? Was there a moment? Is it right now that it's happening as well?
I think it's a slow evolution. You look at the numbers and you start to see, okay, the weeks are, you know, we're doing okay and people are watching, and then you're waiting to see if people are going to, you know, overnights are now different than what they used to be, and a lot more people are watching, you know, after and the PVRing it, whatever. So seeing those numbers hold, especially, you know, it's a very competitive time to launch a show in September up against all the new U.S. shows. And Tuesday night is particularly competitive with This Is Us and Bull. So that's been tough, but we're very happy that despite all that, people are watching and liking this show. And we really seem to get the feedback that when people watch, if people watch and give it a shot, they like it and they stay with it.
I think in season one, like when we started, when we heard the actors read, I think that was an early indication. They started laughing. When the actors start laughing at your material, it's like, okay, that's a good gauge. So I think even early on, it was like, okay, there's some good scenes.
Right.
But it was a slow evolution. Even like before, I don't even know, like the first, even before we got, before it aired, I don't even know if I knew, because it was like, I don't know, that episode's good, that one's good, that scene's awesome, but then that one's like, and that one's, I don't know. So we'll see what happens, and then people connected with it.
And what, on tour, what's like, are you surprised, obviously not by the crowds, but Are there particular characters people are glomming onto? Is there a certain demographic of people coming out to these events?
People love Appa a lot. They connect with him. I think a lot of, well, maybe, it was just, the surprise was a vast range of, you know, people, old, young, different cultures. But everybody would, like, so it was like a lot of families came. There was this, in St. John's, there was this family, the Shepherds, I remember mm-hmm. them, from 3 hours away. They pulled their kids out of school to meet us. And we took pictures with them, and they just loved the show. And they have three teenage students, children. And so it's like, wow, this is awesome. But a lot of families love the show. So we knew that in first year too, the first season. But it's great to meet them. It's great to see them. And then they're in line. And it's like, and no one knows who I am. So that's the best part. So every time I just go outside, look, walk down the line, look at people, and go, oh, wow, it's real. These are real people that love the show.
And so now that you're comedy showrunning experts, we'll leave open the floor to questions, but yeah, obviously it's a tough marketplace, but what advice would you give someone who wants to obviously not work on your show? I mean, that's really just between me and us to talk about. And would a friend spec from 99 be something? The Y2K jokes, they'll be updated.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but what would you say to someone who's like, you know, it's hard to get a comedy off the ground. There aren't a lot of comedies. Or do you have any sort of, I know it's sort of trite, but do you have any advice now that you've gone through this process? Besides write a play, make sure it's a big hit, and hire Kevin.
I don't know. Do you have any? You have more advice than I do.
I do?
Probably.
I don't know. I think in this case, there is a, you know, you can't discount a lot of development that just happened naturally because of the play. You know, it was something that had been in Ince's mind and bones for a long time, just as scenes, as moments, and then slowly coming together, and the voice of Appa, you know, being slowly developing in Ince's imagination, as well as, you know, when Paul started reading the part, that takes shape. Anyway, all that goes to a lot of building and a lot of knitting together of ideas and characters and stories. That's no guarantee, but I feel like compared to some of the other shows I've worked on, this had, you know, had gelled more from a world, you know, a creative point of view, even at the beginning. We just didn't want to screw it up and lose any of what the play held so much of. So I think, you know, really honesty and grounded in as much real experience, even if it's not a show that's set, you know, today and it's a family. Like, shows don't need to be, they can be science fiction, they can be period pieces, they can be whatever, but I feel like they need to be grounded in a human reality that takes some time to, you know, knit together your characters and stories that seem authentic and original and true to those characters. And that takes a lot of time, I think, to talk these characters through and see what feels right, what feels funny and true.
To add to that, I'd say don't be in a rush. I think my ignorance and fear were my greatest strengths in this process. When other production companies were interested in the play, I didn't want something bad to happen. So I was just not in a hurry. I was like, I'm okay with a good play. I don't have to have anything. I don't have to have a TV show. I'm good right now. So no. and then it kind of slowly happened as opposed to quickly. So I'd say, yeah, not to be too much in a hurry to get something launched or made. Take your time.
No, that's good. Mm-hmm. I think that's really good advice. Yeah. Should we open up the floor? Anybody have any questions? Somebody does. I can't even see. Oh, I see. You with the beard, which is the worst thing to say.
In a show like how married were you to the original pitches that you gave for those characters? Like, I guess my question is, what was your process for creating characters that weren't in the play and sort of changing the characters that were in the play to how they end up on the screen? And how married were you to that original idea of what you had to them versus when you got an actor actually sitting in the role?
I'll address the last question, which, because I feel like you imagine, well, Paul and Gene, we kind of had already, so they were kind of the bridge between the play and the TV series. But I think other characters, when the actors, once we cast the actors, then the character shifted towards the strengths of the actors and what they could bring, what they looked like, how words came out of their mouth. So it shifted, and I think we just kind of, I don't know if we decided, it just kind of happened. Just let that happen, allow the actor to, you know, to own that character more. And as with each episode, that character owned it more and more. So, yeah, we kind of let go.
And it depended on the character somewhat. We had, I remember Kim Chi, we were trying to figure out what he might be like, and I remember Ince had identified a video. There was a character in mind, a sort of an attitude of this character, which Kim Chi does have, but the original Kim Chi was dumber. So there was sort of an evolution that happened. In the play, Chung's a bright guy, and he feels like he sort of squandered his lead that he had, you know, sort of captain of the soccer team. He was a bright guy, smarter than his friends, but life happened. This show in particular that you saw tonight was sort of a pivotal story where we thought, what if Chung is not that bright? He's really charismatic. He's really athletic. He's a leader, but he's just like, school was never easy for him. And Kim Chi is actually quite smart. And that shift really was great, but it came about partly because of, we wanted to contrast Chung and Janet. And we wanted there to be a reason why Chung's life may have been harder at home, you know, among other things, but maybe he struggled with school and that was disappointing to his father. And anyway, so that really helped bring some things together. And then with respect to Kim Chi, I remember you showing me Andrew Fung YouTube videos early on.
Yeah.
And they were odd. I don't know if anyone's seen them there, his reviews of water. And I thought maybe.
Andrew's an improviser from Calgary. I saw him in a show at the Edmonton Fringe 2 years ago, I guess, 2-3 years ago. I was like, that might be Kim Chi. So I've been following him since then, and he does these reviews of water.
Bottled water.
Bottled water, the shape of the bottle, the look, the taste. They're like 2 minutes. He plays it straight.
Uh-huh.
So it's not quite ha-ha funny, but it's a little odd. Like, you kind of want to laugh, but you're kind of like, this is a...
Sounds like a runner. Yeah. This is something that I could see in the...
So that...
Maybe.
So there's a bit of that in Kim Chi. That's
right. And as I say, Nicole, when she came to audition, she really stretched our idea of what Shannon could be. And I feel has really, as Ince was saying, you know, when you start to see the talents of your supporting cast, or your main cast, obviously, but it's more surprising because you know your supporting cast less well. And to see their strengths and be able to play and write to those strengths is really fun. Cool. I felt like you had two parts of your question, yeah, and we only answered one.
that was mostly what I was wondering.
Okay. But there are some big changes that happened to the four family members as well. By aging them down, we made them all, I don't know, was it 10 years younger than the play, or at least something like that. So Janet's much younger. Chung's, you know, hasn't had all this stuff happen to him yet. And especially Oma and Appa, You know, they're more contemporary. They're not in their 60s. They're not looking at retiring. They've been here since the 80s. You know, so it was sort of making a shift that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like in some ways the original parents of the play were based on your parents' generation, whereas these are a different generation. There's still some similarities, but we contemporized the parents and the family.
There was a bunch of Koreans who came in the 70s, like my parents, and they were all poor. And then there were a bunch of Koreans who came like in the late 80s, and they were all wealthy. So there's this kind of like, oh, and they, you know, live in the suburbs, and so these are, that's a blend. Mm-hmm. They're a blend between the two.
But interestingly enough, the owners of, so the store that we use is originally Mimi Variety. They've kept our signs up. I really like these guys. They're very canny business people. So they bought Mimi Variety from the previous owner, and it was called Mimi Variety, and they said, oh, well, we'll just keep the name. And then we came along and said, we'd love to use this for a show, and they were, you know, what's the show about? Okay, it sounds okay. And so we put up the signs, and we said, okay, we're done shooting. We're going to take the signs. And they said, no, keep the signs. So they never pay for signs. I love it. And very smart. But they're anyway, they came in the 80s. They're a Korean couple. Grown kids, and it was just a funny coincidence that they were a similar profile to our characters.
Anyone else? I saw someone. I can't.
Oh. Is there any point in your process? Because you hadn't really worked together before. We had conflict. We had hoping that. Yeah. There's lots of conflict. We just talk it out. Do chin-ups. Who can do more chin-ups? Gets their way. No, I think it's just a conversation, and then I think we just leave it, and then we come back to things.
I agree. Because I remember earlier on there was some heated email exchange. Well, heated for us, but like usually it was very collegial, very collaborative. Then occasionally there'd be an email, and I was like, okay, this is very important to Ince. We'll see each other tomorrow and we'll talk about it. Because I don't feel like getting into it in email is going to help.
And I feel like because we do get along well, that if Kevin is really irate about something or something, he feels strongly about something, then, oh, okay, why? He's usually not like that, so... Okay, this is important to him. Well, okay, why? And so then I'm alert to that. But I think it's just talking.
Mm-hmm. And I feel the thing that Ince was talking about earlier, when we both see something quite differently, and it takes a while to get to a place that satisfies what Ince was hoping for from that beat or that scene, and what and why I'm opposed to it, or why I'd like to see something along this line, that's when we get the thing that is neither of us and better than both of us were capable of doing. And I think we both find those moments exciting, because it's just now there's something on the page that neither of us would have come up with without the other.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Thank you for remembering my jokes. It's if we take anything away from tonight, it's... Yes, sorry, you were saying?
Are there any other family TV shows? Are there shows or style books that yourselves as writers took from that you're proud of, that you're like, yeah, we took a little bit of this, a little bit of that? Scripts or textbooks or anything?
Yeah, we stole a lot of material for this show. No. I'll just speak for myself. I'm a fan of, like Jeff, I'm a fan of family comedies. A lot that he mentioned were favorites of mine. But you just hope that you can write in the spirit of that or of the quality of those things that you admired. I wouldn't say there's anything, I can't think of anything specific or any sort of guidelines or rules or anything, but certainly I think all the shows that I always loved helped inform, you know, you say to yourself, well, that show wouldn't do this. You know, let's raise the bar if we can, or You know, so I think you have those little conversations. But I think even, you know, really, I felt like quickly we, you know, the source material of the play set a very high standard, I think, in terms of what we wanted to achieve, both comedically and emotionally. And I think finding those, that balance is what I've found both, you know, so exciting about working on the show, is that combination of tears and laughter. And so there, it's hard to find shows that do that and do it well. But
even the look of the show, I think, like no laugh track, single camera, lit in a kind of a real way, speaks to the influences of other shows that we, and we came to that pretty, I think, pretty quickly. Like everybody was on board. It's like single camera, yes. No laugh track, yes. And so, yeah.
Though at one point I did suggest, and I've never worked on a multicam, but I thought, if there was ever a show to be a multicam, I thought, oh, maybe this is it. You know, it's a stage play. It's one set. It's a store. But I'm very glad I was dissuaded. I mean, who knows? It could have been turned into a great multicam. I don't know. But I love the way it looks and the way it's shot.
You wait for the spinoffs before you... yeah. Mr. Chin. Yeah. We find out he has a twin brother. It's called... Double chin. Look, I'm just saying these things.
You got
I'm not
pitch.
Saying
you
we're going
pitch.
With the first idea, but we have them. I only have 34 more. Well, actually, interestingly, because, I mean, I watch it, and it reminds me of All in the Family, which was well, I mean, it was a multicam, but it was a play, basically, mm-hmm. every week. And what's interesting, Appa's, he's like a modern Archie Bunker in that he's not, it's like he's ignorant, but in a modern way. Like he, which is very difficult. Like there's some things like, well, my dad was like Archie. He would, and he was from Brooklyn, but he would never know those things like mm-hmm. in the real world. Yeah. But I'm a dad of Archie's age now. Like I know mm-hmm. what's going on in the world. I'm not ignorant, but I am out of touch with certain things. I think you really, that character really balances that really nicely. And that's why, again, all the, what, I mean, without overanalyzing, what I think a lot of these family shows have in common is that you believe they care about each other as a family, mm-hmm. which you can't, you know, everyone says, you know, have a cast and make sure everyone, it's like a metaphor for a family. Well, okay, but you can't fake that. Mm-hmm. You know, you could see at a table read, yeah, everyone's nice to each other the first week, but then they have to like the show, and then they have to like the showrunners, and then they have to like the food, and then they have to like where they're shooting. There's a lot of things to have to like. Like a family, it's the same mm-hmm. sort of thing, and you can have one cousin that you hate, but that's probably Terrence on this show, which I know. I'm sure he's lovely. I don't know.
He is.
I relate to Terrence a lot. I don't know why. So yeah, you had a question.
Yeah, along the same lines, are you two aware that you've actually kind of got a similar formula of how MASH became MASH, how it went from a serious movie to surviving daily life of comedy, as well as Seinfeld, starting just slow incubation where they were allowed to stay by themselves and took years to develop before then they really got the characters. Are you too aware that these two shows have a lot of similarities to where Kim's Convenience has come the 12 years now from the original play to where it's now? Do you guys get set a sense? No doubt by accident, but do you have a sense of, whoa, this is actually something, by having this incredible long character development, you've developed something, you have so much material over the next few years to be able to use. Were you aware of sorry.
No, I'm flattered by the comparison. But I don't think it's, I don't know about you.
I didn't know that. Seinfeld had a long incubation period? Oh, okay.
A long time that was
I didn't know about that.
Discarded. It was actually canceled.
Oh.
But it took a long time for their character, at least the flow to develop.
Yeah.
So, started four episodes per season.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you. It's always a roll of the dice. And as I say, I hope for continued viewership and support. And we love making the show, and hopefully people will... like to watch it and more people. but it's always hard to know. I feel like I've been involved in some shows that have done okay, and some other turkeys that no one's heard of, and you try and make the best show you can and see what happens and sort of look at the aftermath and think, what was missing? And sometimes you'll never know, but I'm just glad that so far people are responding so well to it.
Over there?
How old were you guys when you started writing, and how did you break into the industry?
I just broke in, like, last year. I started writing, I took piano lessons. My mom would force us to take piano lessons. And I think I was in grade 7. And I quickly figured out that my mom couldn't tell the difference between the songs I was supposed to play and just me fooling around. So then I just would start fooling around on the piano. And then that kind of led into, I don't know, I got inspired and I'd start writing stuff on the, I'd just start writing words and stories. And as I was fooling around on the piano, and then that was, and I feel like that kinetic thing is what I still do. So that's how I started, right, creatively, yeah.
And I was not very good with words. I studied math and science, and I took a year of engineering before I realized I wasn't going to do that full time. And then I went to Ryerson, and there were some writing courses, but it was really, I think, comedy. They did a comedy review, and they auditioned for performers, kind of Second City style. And I auditioned for that, got in, started writing sketches and performing sketches. So it was sort of through comedy, stand-up, and sketch writing. And I beg your pardon? No, sorry. I was just saying that at Ryerson, I went to Ryerson Radio and Television Arts, and they had a comedy review within the faculty. So every spring, students within RTA would put up a Second City style show. I just meant, you know, it's a bunch of sketches, 30 sketches or something, that we wrote and performed. And that really sort of sparked an interest in, I mean, it was writing and performing, but I quickly realized that I was quite uncomfortable watching myself perform. So I preferred writing.
On the corner over there?
Oh, just one follow-up to that. But that was, you know, 19... anyway, a long time ago. It would be another 10 years before I got my first writing gig. But I was still interested. I was doing stand-up. I was doing all that. But my first gig was about 10 years after I graduated. Anyway, my 30s.
Follow-up to that. So I graduated from York University in the acting program, did some acting. I kind of hated it. I hated the film and TV part of it. I loved the theater. And then Fujian Theater Company in Toronto, Asian Theater Company, Nina Lee Aquino, she invited me to be part of a playwriting unit. And that's where I started writing Kim's Convenience. That was 2005-ish. I did some, continued to act, continued to write. 7 years later, I think I finished the play in bits and pieces. I'd start, stop, give up on it, struggle with it, hate it, start other projects, start other plays, come back to it. And then I sent it with the cast. I sent a package to all the theater companies in Toronto. Nobody wanted it. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it myself at the Fringe. Went to the Fringe, it kind of exploded at the Fringe in 2011, and then all the theater companies wanted it. So that's how that journey took off.
Yeah. I also want to say, I felt like I was late to the game. I remember getting my first writing job when I was 34, and I felt like, oh, because there were some young people, far younger, like 10 years younger. But I also think, I know a guy who started writing in his... he got his first writing gig either his late 40s or early 50s. So there's just no right time. If you're committed to it and you're taking it seriously and you want to get better, people are interested in hearing you if you're thoughtful and, you know, imaginative. Sorry, you had a question, and sorry about the sidetrack.
That's okay. Just in terms of Punch-Up, I'm just curious how you like to run Punch-Up in you guys' room and if you get a lot of time to do it on the production schedule.
I'm taking a long time to answer this question because I don't feel like we always separate Punch Up from just the rewriting process. We definitely do get to a point, and this year we benefited from more writers in the room, so we would have some people working on some big story problems while other people took the stories that were working, and we said, you know, let's make the end of this scene funnier, let's make this button funnier, let's... And so, yes, people would generate, you know, 3 to 5 alts of a particular line or a section. So, yeah, we would... That's usually after the read-through. And... You know, we would spend at least sort of 2 full days rewriting the 2 table read scripts, but usually it takes longer. I always think we'll spend a day on each, but all of a sudden it's 11 o'clock and we're not through the first one, and it's like, okay, we're going home. We'll do this again tomorrow. It really just depends on what is the biggest problem, and depends how many bodies we need on that, and if we... We'll avoid, you know, punching up. We'll always try and get some lines improved, but those can happen latest in the game. So I don't know if that answers the question terribly effectively, but okay.
Do you like? Because do you like the punch up? I hate sitting through punch up. Like I feel like it's... I feel very detached. All of it. Like they're just... Yeah, everything's funny. Like you're all hilarious. Like it's true. But I didn't enjoy. I was like, send in your jokes, and then as a showrunner, you can pick and choose because I don't have to. I just feel like there are people shouting jokes. I don't. Some people love that, and it's fun to be around. I guess it is fun for 2 minutes. But then I find it like, I don't know. What do you guys?
Oh, would you with the writers
with punch up
in just, your room?
Yeah,
like they would pitch.
Right.
The lines?
Live, like everyone's yes. throwing lines
out. Yes.
We don't do that.
We usually just, there's like alts, but it's all written.
One thing we really learned over the two, you were asking things we've learned. We had a bigger room the second year, and we really learned that having too many people on one problem is slow, slow, slow. So we break the group into 2s and 3s. Anything to make the problems more digestible, because you'll just have too many ideas and it's too hard to pick the right one. I think Jeff's approach is a good one, where you just have people go away and write individually, like write funny lines for this scene or this end of this scene, and maybe have 2 or 3 people do it, and then you come back and sort of read through them and pick the best ones, and then you have alts if those ones don't fly. But with the group work where people are talking about things, it's really, we just did it less and less because it was inefficient. And so it's much better to send people off with a specific task to try and rewrite this scene or rebeat this story. Uh-huh. And they go off and they find another room and they work on it on their computer together.
I mean, but that is a process, I'm sure, that takes trust, right? You have to trust each other, the writers, and yourselves, be like, you know, I can come back to that. But there is, I find that more efficient and more, you end up getting something, you know, ultimately you guys want to look at it last, I would think, anyway. So.
Sorry, look at what last?
Like you send people away to go work on something and you're like, okay, well, it's more efficient, and then ultimately you get to look at it last.
Oh, last. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can look at it and bring it back to the room and say this part works, this part maybe doesn't quite work. Yeah.
And when you're reading stuff now, what are, do you like to, or some people like to read originals, specs? I get that question a ton. I'm always like, I'd rather you read it to me because it takes so long to read. But is there, are there, do you like originals? Do you like specs? Have you, I'm sure you're going to start getting Kim's Convenience spec scripts, which I know you're not supposed to do, but you're going to get those.
Mm-hmm.
Do you care? You don't care.
I don't feel like we do. We don't. I mean, it seems like every... Yeah, we don't care.
We don't care.
We're not going to read it. No, we read a lot. And I feel like we've been impressed by Modern Family specs. We've been impressed by plays. Like, I feel It's helpful if it's got some sense of family, but it's not essential. I mean, I feel like you can tell whether there's a fondness for the characters and there's a range of characters and ages and points of view. So those are the most important things, I think.
Yeah, I think I've liked the originals, where they have a where the, like the dialogue seems real, and then it's funny, or there's a take on a character that's funny, that's not, I don't know, yeah, I could argue the other way too, but I don't know. I like reading other people's
like a good showrunner. You can argue both sides. Yeah. It's good
because you know eventually if a writer is hired, they have to write for our show. Okay. So.
So we are often trying to see, okay, are there some qualities of this setting in this world that are translatable to what we're doing? So it's not always a guarantee, but I'm going to, yeah, if there's, like I say, if there's some sort of family aspect to it, it's probably going to help. But I don't want people to be dissuaded. Good writing is good writing.
You should dissuade people. It's important. No, you shouldn't. Question right there.
We brought most of the writers back. We enjoyed working. Mid-production, season one, we hired Matt.
Kippen,
and he was great. So then, I don't know.
It's a mix of, you know, we had skills. Gary, Anita, and Matt had been our production writers. So when we were... you know, in the thick of it. And then in season two, you know, we were very happy with, they worked very well together. And then in season two, Gary got his show greenlit, so he went to shoot that up in North Bay, and so we had to try and fill Gary's vacant, you know, and that's a big hole to fill. So we were trying different people out, and we met a lot of writers and had a lot of people come through the room, and so we sort of feel our way through and say what seems like a good mix, because you never quite know what the chemistry is going to be like. So you can try and say, oh, this person brings this quality and this quality, but it really ends up being what's everyone like in the room together and what do they bring. So there's a lot of trial and error, a lot of bringing in people, and then some people didn't come back, and then other people stuck. But I think we wanted a mix of voices, both male and female, age range, if we could get it. I mean, it's nice to have a room that just represents a lot of different experience.
Were there?
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I think this is like my first writing gig. So before this, there was no paycheck attached to any writing I've ever done. So I'm still writing. Like today I was working on a play, another play. No one's commissioned it. Everyone's going to hate it, but I still write. Like it's, I don't know, there's something in me. It's my way of... my way of speaking to myself, or my way of kind of ordering experience and chaos, and trying to, oh, this is, and it's a comedy. So I'm still hacking away at this play, or I write a bunch of stuff, songs. I'm like working on a song and poems, and I just have like little things here and there, and then I just leave it mid development. But it's always been, I don't know, ever since I was a kid, it's always been I've been driven to kind of go, hey, look at this. Or, hey, look at this. And usually no one's looking. But it's something within that I want to connect. I want to share. I want to, I don't know.
For me, I was always really delighted by people who made people laugh, sketch troops and stand up. And I thought it just seemed fantastic to have that skill and that wit. And so I was always struggling to see if I could mimic that or try it myself. And it's a really tough nut to crack, and it's kept me interested. The challenge of trying to do it at all, and then the challenge of trying to do it better. But you're right. There's so many times that you just think, what am I doing? I got to stop this. Some really bad nights trying stand-up. And you think it's so funny. You're convinced it's funny. And then you're there in front of 80 people, and it's not funny at all. And you're up there for another 5 minutes. I don't know what keeps you going. You just think, okay, that one little thing worked. I'll try it again. But I certainly walked away many times saying, okay, I'm not going to do that. Engineering, here I come. Year two. I can do this. But I just kept at it. We aim for, we like a mix. So we've tried to have both because I feel like...
Too much of one either is kind of like, oh, there's too many clowns or too many...
Introverts.
Introverts.
It either gets too quiet or too noisy, too boisterous in a direction that doesn't help you, or too quiet, and so we don't know where we're going. So it's really...
The mix is good.
It is, and it's really important. We found that we needed to bring in someone to lighten up the room of pensive thinker writers with some people who just like to talk a lot and joke around and say, what about this? What about that?
And here's another dumb idea. Yeah. And not be so precious with ideas. Like, so I find like some of the stand-up comics who write, they're just like, they don't hold on to it. So, you know, it's not so precious to them. And
you need a couple of goofballs, for sure.
Breaks the ice.
And then you need some more serious people, and hopefully it... I mean, everyone's hopefully funny on the page, but, you know, the mood in the room has a huge effect on your productivity.
In the back there?
I have a question about pitching to the network.
I wasn't involved with any pitching process with the network for this.
Yvonne's back there, who's the executive producer. I don't remember. I don't remember pitching. I think it was just conversations with people at CBC who heard the play, who heard about the play, who came to see the play. So the source material was already kind of like interesting to them. We never had a pilot that was like, hey, we never had a Bible up front. It was always just, I guess it was the play that was the pitch. Come see the play, which was a great pitch because it already worked. And there was already a story. It came from The Fringe, Soulpepper, across Canada. It was already kind of a successful thing. So get on board. Maybe that was the pitch. Like, we're going to go somewhere else. You better get on board. But I've never pitched in front of network folk. The people we work with are great, and they give us great notes, and we have a good working relationship with them. But yeah, I can't. I have no experience there.
I can share some pitching experience. Laughter is a good sign in any pitch, at least for comedies. And the other thing is how rehearsed they are. I mean, they're not super rehearsed. They're not, but you go in. I had the good fortune of being able to pitch an idea I had with some people who were very, very experienced. And they'd done a lot of big shows. And I was amazed and impressed with how much rehearsing they wanted to do with me. And, you know, they said, we're going up with the head of the network. This was in the U.S., and they were very experienced with that kind of thing. But, like, we were practicing it in front of their assistants. We were practicing it with other people that they would bring in, and we were practicing it 2, 3, 4, 5 times before we ever did it. And we know who's going to say what, and then it's going to pass over to here, and it's going to seem pretty conversational. Mm-hmm. And it was. It was a loose framework. It wasn't, like, totally scripted, but it certainly had a pretty defined shape to it. And it went pretty well. I think that's important, because I think you feel more relaxed when you feel like, oh, we've got something that we know what we're saying. Anyway, I hope that helps.
I think we have time for a couple more.
That was, so we were in New York with Soulpepper, with Kim's Convenience. Soulpepper went to Broadway. They took like 16 shows. They rented the Signature Theater on 42nd and 11th, like the whole theater, which has like 3 performing spaces. So very much like the Young Center. And Kim's was part of that. It went really well. Critics loved, like, aside from Kim, they loved, I think, everything they saw. New York audiences loved everything they saw. And they're like, and then we had a showing, because Kim's isn't, Americans can't see Kim's Convenience yet. So we had a showing after one of the performances with Paul and I, and they loved it. They're like, how come this is not in America? We're like, okay, that's a good sign. But it went really well. By the end, they sold out all the shows. At the beginning, it was hard. They were very. It's hard to get attention in New York. One surreal moment: we're in what's that place called? Times Square. It's such a traffic. It's just traffic. But seeing Kim's Convenience on, like, the side of a building, you know, one of those things, and it's like Kim's Convenience, Soulpepper, and then seeing Paul rise up from the ground, you know, 30 stories. That was kind of like, that's kind of cool. I think there's plans to go again or go elsewhere, conquer city by city, I don't know. But Kim's is, I think it's kind of on hold for now. Yeah.
All right. Any last questions before we? Oh. When is the U.S. sale happening? Is what he's asking.
When is it? Good question. Not yet.
Not yet.
But soon.
But soon.
I don't think so. I think there's interest. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interest, but it's gonna end up in we're still just focusing on making a good Canadian TV show.
Let them wait. That's what I said.
Yeah, after 5 seasons, then we can jack up the price. It's the complete 10 season. Oh, yeah, I haven't thought about that for a long time.
You thought about it as a movie before you thought about it as a TV series, didn't you?
I wanted to adapt it more as a movie than a TV, because it was, you know, it's a complete story as a play. I thought it would move more elegantly as a film. But, you know, I loved Les Mis, like it has a stage history. And then it comes out with a movie like, I don't know, 20 years or 40 years after it debuts, which I thought that was, I think that's great. Like The Odd Couple, it was a stage play that went to TV and then a movie, and then the movie kind of revitalized the stage play. So hopefully it can follow in that step.
Oh, one more there. Yeah, get to work. Where's your season 5 arc? Come on. You must be from the network. I.
No, we don't have anything in the tank. We spent it all. So we've got a few little ideas for season 3, but no, it seems to take most of our energy just to fill 13. So we haven't looked ahead too much. I mean, there's little things that come up in discussions where we think, oh, maybe that's where this will wind up.
Uh-huh.
But nothing locked in.
And even within the season, I feel like we follow the funny, like in terms of story. I mean, there's a bit of, we have kind of like soft arcs. But then it's really, oh, that pitch is amazing. That story's amazing. Let's make that. Where can we fit it in the season? I don't know. Here. Oh, that story's awesome. Let's fit it here. So it's not like a thought out.
No. It almost seems like the more thought out it is in advance, the less likely it'll happen or the less successful it'll be. I'm not sure why, but we've had tent posts. We've had, you know, an episode where this is going to happen. And then it just...
It's not funny.
No.
Or we just can't make it funny.
Or something else trumped it that was a lot funnier and did the same thing. And now we don't need to tell that story. So I feel like it's best to sort of go with half a plan and let the other half sort of fill in from other people and time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it forces you into... Arcing it forces you into something that you hope will happen as opposed to letting things... And I think part of the magic of making television like this is that the audience, the show, will inform sometimes the direction.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Twitter. I don't know. It's either way, you let them both go. Anyone else before we say, let these people go home and let you guys... Anyone? Well, thank you all for coming.
Yes,
this
thank
was
you
really
much.
Great.
Thank you.
Ince, Kevin, thank you for making the show. We look forward to more. We can come back and do this again next year sometime. And good night, everyone.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Writers Talking TV, presented by the Writers Guild of Canada. All of the Writers Talking TV podcasts can be found on the Writers Guild website, wgc.ca, and at iTunes. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share your feedback at iTunes or email writerstalkingtv@gmail.com. That's writerstalkingtv, all one word, @gmail.com. Many thanks to the team at TIFF Bell Lightbox and to the podcast's technical producer, Philip Vukovich. And thanks to Inns Choi and Kevin White, showrunners of Kim's Convenience, for not rolling their eyes at my dumb questions for Writers Talking TV. I'm Jeff Biederman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you listened on regular speed and not at like 1.5. That's cheating.